Okay, before we do anything new, I got an email maybe last night, this morning, who knows, from Godfrey Butler, who said he listened to our Parsha Shir yesterday, and he heard from the Rav on one of the recordings of the Rav's Shirim that the Rav wanted to answer the question of why the second bracha of, the brachot of Shmoneh Esrei, of the Amida on Shabbos during the day use Vishamru and not the psukim from the Aseres HaDibros in a different way. And the Rav argued that each of the tefillot on Shabbos have a different theme, and the theme of Shabbos day is the nature of the relationship of God and the Jewish people, or the uniqueness of the Jewish people. Hence, we pick the psukim about Shabbos that emphasize that, which is Vishamru, rather than those in the Aseres HaDibros, which I like. It complements sort of my claim that the reason that Vishamru, and not just any mitzvah of Shabbos, but this particular iteration of the mitzvah of Shabbos is what precedes Moshe's defense of the Jews at the Egel, is because what's critical here is that notion of the eternity of the Jewish people's relationship. So that's just a ha'ara. So thank you for that. Okay, what would you guys like to do? We've touched on the beginning parts of it last week, right? The connection between the end of Tetzav and the beginning of Kitisa, and then we've talked about the Shamru. Though there are obviously other things to talk about in Vishamru, but we can now move, if you want, to the central story of the Parsha, which is unfortunately the Egel. The Egel?
Yes.
Unfortunate. You should be like, unfortunately, it's the Egel, which picks up at beginning of Sheini. Okay, so let's pick up there a little bit. We'll see what we get done today. So, Vayitena Moshe kechalot ledaber ito bahar Sinai shnei luchot ha'idut luchot heaven k'tuvim be'etzba Elohim vayara am kivoshesh Moshe lareden min ahar vayikael am al haron vayemru elav kum maselanu Elohim asher yalchu lefaninu kize Moshe ha'ish asher ha'alanu meret mitrayim lo yadanu me'hayelo. So let's just start with the beginning. What drives the Jewish people to the bizarreness of the Egel, whatever the sin is? What would you get just from those psukim, and what clues might you get into the psychology of the Jewish people just from those first few psukim?
They don't think Moshe's coming back.
So that's part of it, right? They don't think Moshe's coming back. But there's really something much odder about these psukim, really, really much odder about these psukim, that highlight part of what is driving their fear. I don't know if you caught it, but I'll read it one more time. Vayikael ha'am al haron, right? Because if you want to know, what is the first thing they say? So vayomru elav, kum ase lanu Elohim, al sher yalchu lefaninu kizeh Moshe ha'ish asher lanu meretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu mehayelo. And there is a very, very inherently contradictory claim in their pasuk that should tip you up, because
Moshe's wrong.
You're missing the words. Kum aselanu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu kizeh Moshe ha'ish lo yadanu mahalo. Right, that is a... Are you listening to the contradiction of Pesachim?
Yeah.
Make a God for us because Moshe the man is missing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right?
Uh-huh.
Right? Aselanu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu kizeh Moshe ha'ish asher elanu meret Mitzrayim lo yadanu mahalo.
Yep.
Right? And you have to look at that pasuk and wonder what is going on. Right? Right? Meaning, it's weird enough that they want an Elohim. It's more bizarre that they want an Elohim because Moshe Ha'ish is dead. Right?
Because Elohim in here means a judge.
Ah, good. So one direction is to say, look, right? That contradiction, right? The notion that what makes them panic is that Moshe Ha'ish is gone, is, and therefore they want to replace the leader, right, would indicate that, yeah, maybe Elohim here doesn't really mean God. Elohim means powerful person or leader, as it does elsewhere in Torah, right off the bat, right, in Bereshit, Right? Vayar benot, right? Bnei Elohim et benot ha'adam. Right? They're the powerful people, assuming those aren't angels, right? And they're just the sons of the leaders who are taking advantage of women because they have power, right? So, again, what exactly this is, right? You can go in the Kuzari direction, right? This wasn't a god. This was meant to be an intermediate between them and God. So that's one direction. And you see sort of the first clue that that's what's going on is that it is, right? You have two words. One of them has to give, right? They want an Elohim to replace an Ish. Right, so if you go in the Kuzari direction, you weaken Elohim. Elohim doesn't mean a god; it means a powerful intermediate between the people and God, because Moshe is missing. That's one direction. Now, there's a few interesting things to note here, though. Well, what's another way of taking this, right? I think there are three ways of taking this, right? One is to soften Elohim, right? Which is what Ariel just did, and I think that's where the Kuzari gets at, right? What are the other two directions? Strengthen Ish, right? Meaning, say, Moshe's not really just a man, right? Right? And what's the third direction?
It's not to
weaken Elohim or strengthen Ish, but understand why an Elohim would replace an Ish. Right? Those are your three directions. Right? You either have to bring Elohim closer to Ish, Ish closer to Elohim, or explain why, despite the fact that Elohim and Ish are distinct, this equation works. So, right? Yeah. So the Kuzari weakens Elohim. Right? So I sort of get that. Right? The second direction is to strengthen Moshe HaIsh. Right? Is to say that Moshe isn't quite an Ish. Right, the problem is that the reason they need an Elohim to replace Moshe is because Moshe is a godlike figure, a demigod. Right? What hint in the pasuk would point you in that direction? Yes, Ish means man, but Shehalanu merits Mitzrayim.
Sounds like he's a savior.
Right? Well, it sounds like he's God.
Yeah.
Right? Remember, this isn't the first time they've said that. They said this in Beshalach. Right? Right? Why did you take us out of Mitzrayim?
Yeah.
For us to die in the Midbar. We would rather have died by God's hands in Mitzrayim. Rabbi Yashin al Tzira Basar. Right? So the second possibility is, why do they need an Elohim to replace Moshe HaIsh? Is because Moshe straddles the line between, in their minds, right? Between Ish and Elohim. Right? He's an Ish, but he is Asher HaElanu Meretz Mitzrayim. Right? He is in some, whether you think he's a demigod, or he's the physical instantiation of God in this world, or something like that. By the way, who is the first to blur the line between, or potentially blur the line between Moshe and the normal human being?
Who blurs the line?
Yes, right. Where might this come from? Right, what might drive this problem?
You mean God?
Yeah, God. When? In Shmot, what does he say to him? Right, when he's debating with him. Aaron, achicha, yeh nevi'echa. And you will be for him. What's the pasuk?
What does it say? Elohim, what does it say?
Yes. Right? When Hashem tells Moshe to go, and Moshe really doesn't want to go, and he's fighting with him about it. Right? So he says, one second.
But Elohim there means like ruler, no?
Okay, fine. But, right, he calls him an Elohim and says that Aaron achicha yed nevi'echa. Right? Meaning, yes. I mean, yes, it clearly doesn't mean God, but when you call somebody a...
He's a Elohim with a Navi.
Right. Yeah, with Elohim with a Navi, and, right, and give him a Navi, right? That type of of language is a bit striking. I can find it. I don't know. Da, 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 da.
You can wash the pan precisely. Yeah.
Of course.
Anyways, whatever. I don't know which one it's in, and it's always very hard in Mikros Gedolos to find a place because you have to like turn 10,000 pages.
It's not good Flemish for broad.
Yeah, no, it's not good for trying to find what it is. But right, so that's the second possibility. And what's the third possibility?
They knew he was a person, but now they realize person was inadequate. He's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Meaning the third possibility is that they were fully aware that Moshe was only a person
That's
and intermediate to God. And that was the problem. Apparently he couldn't handle it. Right? Meaning, right, think about the way the Midrashim develop it. That they panic because they think Moshe's dead.
Yeah.
Right? But why is Moshe dead? Presumably because he couldn't handle being so close to God.
Right.
Which means that we thought that it was possible to have a human being who was a conduit to God. But apparently not, because Moshe was such a great ish, right? He was Elanu Meretz Mitzrayim, he goes up and speaks with God, and now he's gone, he's dead. The only thing to replace it is an Elohim,
right?
Right? Right? And I think, right? So I think, right, if you trace the way the Mefarshim take it, you'll see that they divide basically into these three camps, right? There are those like the Kuzari who say, right, and I think what's really driving them partially is this, is if they're trying to replace Moshe, then why do they need an Elohim? Oh, it must be Elohim doesn't really mean God, it means intermediate, right? Or, no, if they want an Elohim to replace Moshe, part of the problem must be that they have raised Moshe up to the status of demigod, and that's what's creating sort of this tension, right? Or, no, they really did believe that Moshe was a person, a great person, and the Chiddush was that they had this confidence that Moshe could successfully be the intermediate between them and God, and when he didn't return, they panicked and said it must be that it is impossible for a man to accomplish that, and therefore the only thing that we can have is an actual God, because no human being can actually fill that role. Mm-hmm. Right? Now the irony is that the consequence, and this is something that Yoshi Farajun points out, that the consequence of the Chet HaEgel is what?
They died.
Yes, but in terms of Moshe, right, since that's what we're focusing on, is that Moshe actually becomes godlike, right? Moshe actually becomes godlike, right? Because by the end of the story, right, Moshe, as we'll see, becomes even more of the main conduit between them and God, even more than he was before, so much so that what? They can't look at him.
His face starts glowing.
Right? Meaning, he literally becomes, right? You know, like, the way we relate to God at Har Sinai is you can't touch it, you can't look, there's clouds, there's whatever. Moshe has to put a mask on his own face. Right? It's a pasuk.
Did I miss this?
Moshe,
it's a pasuk.
He wore a mask.
He wore a mask because they couldn't look at his face.
Wow.
Right? Meaning, ad kedei kach. Right? Meaning, the irony of the whole thing is that Moshe, that Moshe's defense of the Jewish people and that whole process he goes through actually raises him to such a level that, in fact, that fear is actualized. That Moshe ends up crossing that line from mere human to godlike, demigod person. Right? Now, whether you actually think that in a theological sense, I don't mean that in a theological sense.
Obviously.
I mean in a practical sense, that the way they are forced to relate to him from now on is the way they are God, meaning we physically can't approach you. Right? Not just like you're great, like physically we can't look at your face because it is so imbibed divinity. Right? So that's what Yoshi Farajun points out, that the irony of the whole thing, right, is that part of what generates the problem, which is this, blurring the line between Moshe and God, ends up being the consequence of that very sin.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
So we'll explore that more. Wow.